Neil Ross here, and it's time to get altered and get geeky on Altered Geek with Steve Megatron.
Hello, and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and in this episode of the podcast, well, it's the last one of 2018. Yeah, it's kind of crazy, isn't it? So yeah, we're breaking down the final episode of the podcast for the year. By this point, you should have heard a variety of different pre-recorded podcasts for December and part of November, which they were all recorded pretty much in November. I've been taking some time away, and I finally recovered from my cold after a five-day fast. Kind of took care of the whole thing, so I'm feeling energized, not coughing, so everything's great. Plus, a lot of new ideas for the podcast going into 2019. I have a ton of submissions for guest hosts in 2019 through a couple of things, particularly podcastguests.com, to kind of name drop there. And so you'll be hearing some people that are featured on that website, as well as our regular roundtable of people on Geekcast Radio and This Week in Geek. So that's pretty much how everything's going to go down in 2019. There's going to be a lot of different content, a lot of diversity, a lot of brand new topics, a lot of different conversations, a lot of voices. So it's going to be interesting, to say the least. And there's going to be kind of sporadic releases on some of the guest conversations. These episodes will still be out on Fridays, so really nothing's gonna really change all that much. So yeah, without further ado, we're gonna cover a variety of topics. I'm gonna hit the grab bag of mail and conversations that I've been having on Twitter that are kind of interesting, as well as my thoughts on Avengers Endgame and Crisis on Infinite Earths, and a few other topics. So let's get right down into it. So, Avengers Endgame. Yeah. So anyways, Avengers Endgame was actually, quite honestly, much better than what I thought it was going to be as far as the trailer. Infinity War definitely felt like a first part of a saga, and Endgame is supposedly going to take place like some 6 months later or a year later, something like that. Anyways, you get to see, at the beginning of the trailer, you get to see Tony Stark speaking into a recording of his Iron Man helmet, basically saving a vlog for Pepper in the event that he gets back, or the ship gets back. He's piloted some ship in general, it doesn't really say, towards Earth, and the food's run out and the oxygen runs out in like 12 hours or something, he says. So I'm kind of thinking that we're going to get a save in that you're probably going to see Tony obviously is going to survive, but you might see Ant-Man actually have something to do with that. Being that he shows up in the trailer and Steve Rogers is in his full cap getup except for the helmet, and Black Widow's with him, and he's like, when was this recorded? And she's like, he's right out front. And so you get to see that, and various of the characters are all in disarray and in various remote parts. So I'm kind of intrigued on how they're going to take this movie. Obviously, all the contracts are pretty much off the table at this point for the original Avengers, who are all going to be back in this. And then you get to see Hawkeye back, of course, more or less dressed as Ronan. I'm intrigued to see what they do with this and how they reset and how they reboot and kind of bring people back and fix things and screw with the timeline of the first Avengers film and kind of take it back where it all began. It'll be interesting. And then moving on to Crisis on Infinite Earth, or more or less the Elseworlds crossover, to begin with. I really enjoyed this one. This is probably by far the best crossover we've had for the CW Arrowverse so far. I did love how Barry and Oliver basically body swapped. They basically looked like themselves. It was just, you know, they took on the mannerisms and in the body traits of their alternate superhero personas. Meaning that Barry took on, like, Oliver's, you know, conditioning and double-jointedness and all of his scars and everything else. And Oliver took on Barry's speed force, his time, just everything associated with his character. And it was funny to learn or see them both learning how to use each other's powers and trying to grasp with being a hero in that element. And then them meeting each other, getting locked up in the vault, and then having to go to Earth 38 with Supergirl. And they, of course, recognized who they were. And then you get to see Superman and Lois Lane. And so it was really cool seeing all that. And then they go back to the Arrowverse, and they make some quip about the Legends, and then in the Legends episode you get to see why, you know, the timeline's all screwed up there too. So they're kind of it explains why they won't be there in the crossover. But anyways, you get to see them going against the anti-monitor. You get to see John Wesley Shipp's 1990s Barry Allen Flash come in the part two in full get up and everything, and it was really cool to see him in there, although it was short-lived, unfortunately, which I'm really sad about because I thought that we would actually get something there. And then you get to see Batwoman, and they kind of explain that Bruce is off somewhere, alluding to almost that it could be the Dark Knight Rises Bruce Wayne. Alluding to it, it's not really, they kind of hop, skip, and jump around it. You get to see the little statue thing that they would pop the head up and press the button for the 1960s Batman to go to the Batcave. And then you get to see Bane's mask from The Dark Knight Rises. So there were nice little Easter eggs throughout the episode as well. And you get to see Arkham, the battle in Arkham. And Batwoman was pretty cool in there. Although, the only thing that kind of irked me about it was when she, you know, they would do the battle scenes or the cut scenes to her and then do the Batarang and everything. It screamed Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin as far as, like, the cheese level on that. And it kind of rubbed me wrong. I don't know how it worked with you guys, but it just rubbed me wrong in that section. But I think that she was pretty strong as a character overall, just from what we got. And I would possibly watch it. I just don't know. I really want Batman in there in the CW Arrowverse. I don't care about the DC Universe, although if they're going to bring Batman, it would be on the DC Universe app, because it would be a different form of media. Like, I don't think they can physically put him on cable television, according to the Disney Fox acquisition, because Fox owns the TV rights for Batman, and also the fact that he's going to show up in Gotham this season. They're promising that Batman's coming. Even the poster says the Dark Knight is coming, because they're supposed to jump, like, by the end. They're going to do a 10 years later thing showing, you know, all the villains and all the heroes and their various personas and styles, you know, having Penguin being overweight and monocled and, you know, so you're going to, you know, James Gordon with the mustache and the, you know, commissioner look, and you're going to see all that because it's going to be jumped like 10 years in the finale, which is kind of a cheese cop-out too, being that it's going to be a 12-part season 5, basically doing, you know, No Man's Land. So, yeah. Anyways, back to the Elseworlds. It was also interesting because John Wesley Shipp, his Barry Allen, says to Diggle, he's like, "John, where's your ring?" Which harkens back to when Diggle originally showed up and everybody basically thought that he was going to be John Stewart, Green Lantern. And honestly, at this point, I would love to see him become Green Lantern because he does have that military background. He does have the will of steel on the show. I mean, on occasion, he doesn't. But as a whole, I could see him playing the role really well. And he wouldn't even need the face mask or anything else. I mean, everybody sees him anyway, so give him the Green Lantern suit, the ring, and then, you know, the green eyes like he is in Justice League Unlimited, and just make it that. I mean, it would be fun, and it would kind of switch things up for his character and give him more of something to do in the show. But I really enjoyed what they did with Elseworlds, and then they switched it in the third part, well, at the end of the second part, but in the third part, made them basically just totally mishmashed everything. It changed all the heroes, changed all the villains that show up anyway. And there's a gamble that comes at some point with Oliver talking to the Anti-Monitor about, you know, the timeline and not letting Barry and the Flash and Supergirl getting incinerated by slowing time to stop Deegan. And it doesn't quite tell the payoff on it. Some people are thinking that Oliver's half-sister is going to end up taking care of the Green Arrow role and taking over for him, and then he'll die. But I don't think so, because they renewed all the shows for another season on the CW. So it's not going to happen that way. Although they may play with some, you know, it is the Arrowverse. So they kind of jump around with time travel a lot. But it did tease at the end, when they reset everything, that Crisis on Infinite Earths, and they had this character look like a Court of Owls, basically, kind of character, with a mask and everything, and total cheese and creep factor. But they said Crisis on Infinite Earths coming fall 2019. So that's going to be something totally new to check out, too, on the Arrowverse, which may also lead to Barry disappearing in that crisis that they've been teasing since season one of The Flash. So, and it may have something to do with Legends. Maybe that's going to, you know, crash and burn at some point, and then they'll have Gideon in, you know, the Flash museum, or hidden in that compartment of Star Labs. But I guess time will tell. So, going to move on to some listener comments, as well as things that have been going on Twitter, right after this.
Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
So, I had to finish out 2018. I just had to. Had to finish it out with some various things that were conversed about on not only email, but the Twitter sphere. But going back to the end of November, because we haven't had a up-to-date episode recording since then, I wanted to kind of cover everything that hasn't been covered that's kind of interesting, but not necessarily timely. So Scanner51 sent in, "Hey guys, something came up between my sister and I. She's a high school teacher, 10th grade, recently told me a story about several students in her class that she had to told to just Google it and receive several blank looks. They didn't know how to Google. But it got me thinking on why they didn't know how to Google it. You would think they would, these younger generations grew up on it, but they don't Google anymore, apparently, is what she says, or he says about her students. All they do now is ask Siri for information, which really isn't that much different, although they don't have to type. And I'll kind of get into a little bit of this in a minute, but it has to do with the smart speakers. He continues, I was thinking maybe it's their inability to type properly. We know shorthand texting is the way that most type. I was hoping to get thoughts and opinions on this. Also, she told me that several kids during the mandatory PSAT testing they do now did not know how to fill out a Scantron sheet. The bubble letters you use to spell out your name, one bubble per letter. Oh, and some didn't know their address. They know how to walk to and from school, but not the numbers. Weird or just plain sad. As far as the asking Siri or Google or Alexa or all those things, we recently just got a Google Home Mini. Well, actually, my wife did for her birthday. I'm getting one for Christmas, I'm fairly certain. Or by the time this comes out, I will know for certain. But I'm sure I'll post it on Twitter when I do. But anyways, we've had this thing hooked up, and my boys are already familiar with it. My wife's already familiar with it. We have a friend that has a Amazon Alexa. And you would say, Alexa, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, you can ask it questions. You could do this and that. And it would just do it. I will say the Alexa is probably by far the Amazon Echo. Alexa is the AI on it. But the Amazon Echo is probably the most advanced as far as capabilities and functions and questioning and everything else. Although Google is short or close behind and slowly closing in on that gap. But I would say Siri is like number three out of them at this point, and Cortana is probably number four. I don't know anybody that even uses it. I hear a rumor that Microsoft is changing the name again to something else. But I don't even know of anybody that uses Siri unless they're on an Apple. So suffice it to say, we have a Google Home Mini, and the boys were having fun asking it questions, you know. And if you ask something in a different way, it'll answer it differently. Like, my boys asked at my father-in-law's house, because they have like six of them around there, like one per room or something. He asked, what does a dolphin sound like? And it does the ee. And then he goes to another room and he says, how does a dolphin talk? And it does the, you know, something like that. And so you get two totally different answers, depending on how you ask the question. And in our house, we asked it to play music, or which it'll play on Google Play Music. You don't get to specify unless you sign up, and so on and so forth. But so we would do that, or you can do like measurement changes, or you can ask it questions, or you can have it set sleep timers, or you can have it, you know, just there's a variety of things you can do, and it syncs to your phone with your calendar and everything else. Well, I'll probably do it as a gag when I get mine on the podcast, like just ask it questions and just see what happens. But anyways, I think these younger generations know how to Google. There may be the few exceptions that don't. Because I think that nobody really thinks of it as a Google. I think they think of Google of, you know, in the sense of the company, and that's their name for search. Whereas we had things like, you know, go to Yahoo, go to Lycos, go to Alta Vista, you know, go to, you know, all these other variety ones. I don't even know how many of those are still around now. I know Yahoo is, but it's a different generation. And, you know, we had to dig through directories and message boards and everything else to find things that we wanted when we were first starting out on the internet in the 90s. And or the you know, the alt news boards and everything else. This generation has grown up beyond where we did. I mean, we were advancing into the Yahoo, Google, you know, era when we were in the early 2000s. And now you've got, they're all mainstream. Now it's the AI. Now it's asking the questions. Now you press the button on your phone, or you press it on your smart home device, and it just it does it for you. And it's almost like this spell check. It's almost like spell check when you type a text message or on the website. They have this thing called grammar or something like that. Now that you can add to your browser, and you can add it to various devices or whatever, and it will literally spell check and grammar check everything you type. So it's almost like the spell check on your phone, and it's almost, I feel like it's almost dumbing us down, having all this AI that does everything for us, and we become so reliant on it that we're not held to the same standard we were like 20 years ago. And I get it, technology changes and things happen, and you kind of have to move ahead with those things, but you, on a basic level, you should still know how to spell. You should still know basic grammar. I have issues with commas, and that was an issue that I've had since being in grade school, high school, middle school. I could never get anybody to actually answer it correctly for me, and I think that it's, and I still have problems with it, even today. And although I am learning a lot of it because I use those apps and those, you know, the thing like grammar, because I want to know, why is it wrong? Like, for me, there's this incessant need to know why. And so I guess, you know, if you're using it for the right reasons, I guess it's great. But if you're using it just to kind of, oh, it does it for me, I don't need to know, then it's bad. Because you're relying on this technology because you're not wanting to put the time and the effort into learning something new. And so I think that, you know, with the shorthand texting, I think it's just because people are lazy and they don't know how to spell the stuff. I see a lot of it. I see people that are in the corporate world that type on their social media all the time and misspell everything. Like, or misspell specific words, and I'll catch it. It drives me bonkers. Not saying that I don't misspell things from time to time or I don't shorthand things, but if it's the same type of thing over and over, it kind of rubs me wrong when I see it. Now, same thing with, you know, PSAT. Now, when I was in school, it wasn't mandatory to take the PSAT. And honestly, I didn't do so well at it. I don't do well at tests. But if you sit me down, ask me, write a paper or do something in that fashion, I would destroy you compared to doing a test. I was never really good at test taking. And I must still not be, because if I was, I think that 90% of the interviews I've done, I probably would have got the job. So again, it's a test. It's just learning how to maneuver it and kind of go beyond it. But as far as the Scantron thing, it's not rocket science. Like, I mean, again, kids today don't really know some of that, but it could be just that school, could just be those kids. Maybe they're just used to not having to fill out paper. We used to color in dots and color in like the interiors of like the A, the E, the D, you know, P, O, any of those letters that had something with, you know, just used to bubble it in when we were kids. I mean, I still do it from time to time when I'm bored. But it's not really that hard. The address, I got nothing for you there, man. I got nothing. My own son is 6 and almost knows his address. So I don't know. Maybe they just didn't teach it to their kids, or they moved a lot. I really don't know. That's just that. I'm not going to even try. And then Scanner 51 mentions the Titans update, saying that, you know, Doom Patrol's great. You know, the Morrison run of it. You know, he's talking about the Titans, which, by the way, I saw that there was a teaser for Robin Dick Grayson versus Batman coming up in the finale. So if that actually is Bruce Wayne Batman and not some kind of an imposter or thing that's supposed to look alike or something, or a scarecrow thing or whatever, that would possibly get me to jump ship if he was going to be a part of the show. That's the only way I would tune in. So, and then moving on to his other post that he sent in, he says, as always, great show. A few episodes ago, you'd mentioned, or you'd had Movie Revolt Dan on, which was, I think, episode 301 or 302. And so 10 episodes ago, he says, you guys were talking collecting comic covers. And he says, I wanted to jump in on this one. These days, I mainly do digital, but on occasion, I will buy single issues. I did buy a few issues of Action Comics 1000. Really can't wait for Detective Comics 1000. But aside from that, I do buy cool-looking covers. Not for value, just based on looks alone. I was buying a lot of the female hero comic covers, and I still do from time to time. The grand plan was to decorate one of my daughter's walls with covers, but then we moved, and that's been put on hold for now. What I do now is check for local cons, see who's going to be there, buy their books, and then get them signed. I don't resell the signed books. I like looking at them. Get dozens of signed ones, some of my faves here. So he drops like an older DC Comics with the older logo. It looks like a number 5 or something, Batman and Robin, with Frank Miller and Jim Lee. Really awesome looking cover. We got the bats on it. Then he's got DC Batman number 700. Again, cool cover. Then he's got Batman and Robin Nightmare City under the newer logo on issue 17. And then he's got the new 52 Batman Detective Comics number 27, the mega-sized issue. And I've collected a lot of comics, mostly for the cover. I don't really get into the stories anymore, but I can definitely see I've physically gone in and bought comics just for the covers before, because they're like little mini posters if you just have them on display. He says, in fact, next summer, I am entering my Batman stuff into an adults hobby competition at my local county fair, and some of my signed Bat books will be part of the display. I chose Batman because my wife thinks I can win. If everything works out, I plan on doing it for the next few years. Star Wars, Superman comics, Batman, Superman. He says, great show. Keep up the great work. Thank you, as always, for tuning in, Scanner 51. We definitely appreciate it and love the enthusiasm and the dive into the comics and the Bat realm, as always. So I'm going to take a pivot here to go to some of the social media aspects of things that I've been having fun conversing about. Now that I've mentioned the whole thing with the Google Home, I saw this blog post the other day. It was more of a social media post, but this Mark Guberti on Twitter has an insane amount of followers. Looks younger than me. Not sure how old this guy is, but anyways, he's a public speaker, content marketer, author. And he posted something of 10 reasons, you know, or 5 reasons why every teenager needs to have a blog. And I was kind of like, eh? Because when I was a kid, well, when I was a teenager, which wasn't really that long ago. I mean, it's half my life ago at this point, which is kind of disturbing when you think about it. 16 years ago, 16. Wow. Anyways, he says, you know, the why they need to have a blog with, you know, the dawn of social media and blogging. It's now, you know, more possible than ever for, you know, a teen to be successful. And I'm not quite impressed with the dude's website, but obviously he's doing something right because, he posted this like 4 years ago, and I just now saw it, and he's got, you know, a Facebook group, you know, success group and all this other stuff. So anyways, he says blogging gives teens something good to do. And, you know, blogging makes them feel more significant, allows them to feel, get into the real world sooner, more flexibility on schedule, and, you know, it's a unique experience. I did it a long time ago on this thing called LiveJournal. And I'm not sure how many people remember LiveJournal, but it's super old. And the funny thing was, is it was founded in 1999. I remember signing up for this years ago, as did my wife. And we used to write our blogs or write, you know, notes or whatever through it. And it had to have been when I was like 16, 17, I used it, maybe even 15. Despite the fact I ran a Dragon Ball Z website and a Transformers website, I still somehow found time to do this. It was like my own version of a journal or something. I really wasn't sure what to do with it other than what I kind of did on social media, which is, you know, it's kind of what people did on the original, you know, social media startup. They, you know, I ate this for lunch. I did this today, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was basically like an echo chamber. And I more or less stated this on Twitter that, you know, when I was a teenager, we had this thing called LiveJournal and MySpace, you know, two areas where we complained into an ether and no one really heard us. I mean, MySpace they did, but still, I mean, that's kind of where a lot of people learned how to code HTML, was you had to code your stupid signature box, or any kind of graphics you wanted, which I would create from scratch. And you had to do that in order to customize it. And I refused to join Facebook for like years, even though I knew it was around when I was on MySpace, but then I eventually jumped ship. But I also ran websites for Transformers, Emulation, Dragon Ball Z, so yeah, I'm a geek. And then Danny Manis like jumps in, and who's a, you know, script consultant kind of guy, and he says, when I was a teenager, we had this thing called an actual freaking journal made of paper that you wrote in and hid in your room because no one gave a crap about anything you were thinking, doing, or feeling. You just dealt with it yourself and showed it to your therapist 15 years later. He says, this post just made me feel old. And I said, yeah, I feel old by today's standards, and I'm only 32. Still prefer to write on paper overall and self-analyze my own thoughts. And you know, paper is probably the best window to your thoughts at the time. But yeah, I mean, I totally get it. And I don't know, like, it makes you feel old when you start looking at stuff like that. You're just kind of like, wow. I use the podcast and I use Geekcast Radio as kind of my soapbox now. And I use Twitter. I mean, it's kind of my outlet. Like, I don't really write a per se journal, but you know, that's kind of neither here nor there. Yeah, it's just it's crazy when you think about it. And then the other day we had a podcast which was new, and I really don't like the name, but that's more so because it's just it's disturbing. I said this comment too on Twitter the other day, that I was glad that we were the first to cover and review Beast Wars and Beast Machines in 2010 on the Beast Unleashed podcast on Geekcast Radio, meaning that I don't have competition now too. I can sit back as others give it their own spin now, having already said my piece. Somebody else was saying, you know, always amusing to see the youngsters retreading trod ground, although it can be annoying when they act like they own the places they walk by your well-marked house. I took it in stride. It doesn't bother me as much as it probably would have years ago. Like, years ago, I probably would have pissed me off seeing somebody else basically do what I just did. But anyways, the podcast is called Bestiality. It's the premier source of Transformers Beast Wars, or as they're often called, Beasties. And yeah, they're it's based out of Canada, and they're also using SoundCloud. Like, I have nothing against Canada. It's more so the SoundCloud. And they're trying to make their hashtag bestiality a thing. It's just... It's kind of disturbing. I would have chosen a different name for sure. This is like the third podcast to try and retread our ground. And honestly, like, I think that we did fairly well for what we did at the time. And granted, these people are probably... I haven't even listened to it yet, so I'm not really passing judgment on it. It's just the name is disturbing enough on its own. Their cover at least doesn't look like total garbage like some other ones I've seen try and retread. So I will say SoundCloud does suck, though. Having used like 8 different services for hosting for podcasts, it's not where I would go at all. And finally, rounding out the Twitter war, as I'm putting it, I don't know if you guys notice this, but when I'm sitting on Twitter and you're looking for, you know, just whatever it may be, geek news, whatever, and you keep seeing these websites coming up with garbage articles, and you know that they're blatantly garbage, does it drive you bonkers? Because it does for me. You know, and what I'm saying about that whole thing is when you see clickbait articles, not just, you know, the ones where they're talking about certain aspects of a show, or they're reviewing something, but the straight up garbage posting. It drives me mad. Like, it's irritating enough that I'm tempted to start name-dropping a lot of these websites and more or less just totally spoiling the whole thing. So I made this comment just kind of generically because I saw this, saying clickbait news, no matter the industry, needs to stop. Especially when it's cryptic wording or rumors or a he said, she said scenario pertaining to entertainment or whatever. There are two lines of information on an opinion and the rest expounding the two lines. And the general consensus is people agree. I said, I'm so tired of seeing articles like that. I'm tempted to do a new version of the 10-minute blitz where I run through all that news and tell what information is a waste and which is relevant. Maybe even telling which sites post clickbait to news ratios. Because it's just gotten out of hand. Point in case, there's a particular site, which I'm trying very hard not to name drop, although they're all pretty bad with it anymore. Like, if you go to, you know, for instance, comicbook.com, which is owned by CBS, so it's almost kind of not really a good review site for anything CBS owns, because it kind of gives everything that CBS owns a blatantly good review. Point in case, Discovery, although if you look anywhere else on the net, like, it's pretty much bombed on a lot of those sources. I'm not saying it's a terrible series, I'm just saying in general the consensus is that it's sloppy. So we'll see how season 2 turns out. But what I'm saying is they had an article, and I'm trying to find it. I did have it pulled up. I lost it. But they had an article where it was the most clickbaity crap in the world of something with the superheroes. It had to do with Margot Robbie revealing whether or not she's really Harley Quinn. Well, of course she's not. She's an actress. So there's this whole, like, one-pager literally going back and forth, laying it up, talking about all this other crap. You know, it goes, you know, her briefly commented on whether or not her Harley Quinn role in DC is more than just a role. And then it jumps to The Dark Knight, you know, and talking about people who played various, you know, characters and roles. And then it goes to, you know, taking part of an interview that she was doing. And then she says, and mind you, this is quoted, this is one line that she said. And then there's like an entire article surrounding this one line. I am not Harley Quinn, but I play Harley Quinn. What? Why? Like, why is this garbage? Like, write real articles. Like, I just don't get it. Like, we have so much out there that's, like, decent. Like, why? Just, I honestly don't know why, but it's so, so stupid. So, like, what are you guys' thoughts on clickbait articles? Do they drive you nuts? Like, they bother the crap out of me. So, what is your thoughts on it? Like, I really want to know. But that's the kind of stuff you can kind of expect from heroic Hollywood when they're not having, you know, things like production wrap, here's a photo, or, you know, director explains why, blah, blah, blah. Like, director James Wan explains why Aquaman must come before Aqualad. Because, he's, you know, Aquaman. Like, it's another one of those stupid articles. Like, it just, for that reason alone, I had to unfollow their whole site just because it's majority of their stuff is like that. Like, I've switched other reputable sources that don't do that as much. And it's been so much nicer. So, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I can't deal with that anymore. So, on a lighter note, I'm going to go over to a TV article. And that is, and it's a couple weeks old at this point, but Jeffrey Dean Morgan is making his way back to Supernatural for the upcoming 300th episode, which they don't say why or how he's going to return, but he hasn't been back in a while. And we all know that their monumental episodes can be all kinds of crazy. Because their 200th episode, they had, like, some kind of a play, you know, going on of the whole Winchester thing. You know, they had him, you know, he's been off the show for 11 years. I mean, season 2 finale, All Hell Breaks Loose Part 2, was when he escaped the open gate to hell and helped his boys kill Yellow Eyes. And then, you know, he went to heaven. Then it says his death, which occurred in the season 2 opener in My Time of Dying, when he sacrificed himself to save Dean. So... I'm wondering if he's going to be back for a little bit, or if he's just going to be back for that episode. They know that the Supernatural's 300th episode is titled Lebanon, which will air Thursday, February 7th. My guess, he's going to redeem and he's going to pull Dean away from Michael from the alternate Earth. But that's just my thoughts on it. But I'm excited that he's coming back. I think that's really awesome. Plus, I feel like we never got, like, the proper closure for that character, and I'm kind of excited for it, to be honest. So, That's really the only thing that's gonna be hooked at this point. Like, I could be done with the show today. Like, it's not a huge deal to me, on that front. So the last thing I'm gonna cover is, what are some things that you guys are looking forward to for 2019? What are some things that you're hoping, as far as like TV, movies, games? You know, are there games that you want to see revived? Are there TV series you want to see revived? I mean, we've got a ton going on with 2019 as far as like streaming services coming out. So, like, are there specific ones you're going to kind of flip-flop between? Are you going to subscribe to all of them? Are you going to cancel some and subscribe to another? I mean, what do you guys foresee in 2019? Or predictions, honestly? Because I think that that would be really cool to see what predictions you guys have for 2019, in general. I will probably do a predictions episode with Mike Powers once the new year hits and everything. I will say that the Geekcast Radio Year in Review episode will be out probably right around the time that this episode airs. So be sure to tune into that. Hope you guys enjoyed the Christmas episode of the podcast. And found a lot of entertainment with that 12 Days of Geekmas, as it were. But yeah, I'm excited for 2019, and I hope you guys have enjoyed this bumpy roller coaster of 2018 with Geekcast Radio and Altered Geek, as we go into year 7 of the show next year. And Geekcast Radio hits year 10. It's crazy. I mean, I've been podcasting since like 2005 or 2006, 2007, but the network has been quasi going, if you count like all things Transformers, since 2008. But it officially launched June 1st, 2009. So let me know what you guys think. Sound off. And yeah, if you could follow us on iTunes, if you need help finding the podcast. There's going to be a lot of new ways to find it on the new Geekcast Radio website when that launches. I'm so geeked. I'm working on that pretty hard at the moment, and so is TFG1 Mike. So we should have a brand new interface, brand new website, easier ways to find the subscribe area on the podcast. So if you're unable to find out how to subscribe on a variety of platforms, there'll be a one page for every show with all of their subscription links. So that'll be super convenient for everybody involved, ourselves included. You can find the podcast on Spreaker. You can find it on iTunes, Google Play, or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Spotify. I'm working on Pandora, so we'll see what happens there. They're a little slow on the trigger. So anyways, have a happy new year. Get altered. Get geeky with the Altered Geeks. See you next time.